Well, welcome everybody to another Nexus webinar. My name is Andrew Estes. I'm your host today, and thanks for joining me. And today I have my good friend, Carrie Snyder. Carrie was with us, may look familiar to some of you guys. Carrie was with us earlier this year at Nexus for our event called Think Next in Dallas. Carrie's been a good friend of mine for a long time, probably since 2016. Our family moved up to Loveland, Colorado to plant a church, and he was actually there on opening Sunday, our grand opening, to help us serve and get things going. Carrie serves currently at an organization called Glue, based here in Colorado, which is a new kind of outreach platform designed to help churches reach their city in a way that saves time, activates your team, and increases impact. And with decades of pastoral experience, Carrie has incredible insights into bringing innovative outreach strategies to churches. He's passionate about the mission of the church, team leadership, and so many other things. He's putting the final touches on a master's degree in organizational leadership, and he's an incredible coach, and not to mention a Loveland Recreation Men's Church League softball champion. We've played together for years, but Carrie, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to be with you guys. Anytime I get a chance to hang out with you, Andrew, and the team from Nexus, and incredible group of church leaders and church planners and pastors and church workers. I mean, that's what I'm passionate about. And so thanks for having me, man. Total pleasure and honor to join you guys today. And I should note that the only reason we won championships is because this man hits home runs. I am the only member of our team to ever hit a home run, a walk-off home run for a loss. So that is my claim to fame.
Yeah. This is dumb softball rules.
Yep.
So excited to have you on, man. We've talked about this for a long time, just organizational leadership, and in particular, just so many different aspects of evaluating your team and being able to just do what we do better, to understand ourselves better, understand our team better, and all the different facets that go into the makeup of that. And so there was a book that came out, Patrick Lencioni's The Working Genius. And I love anything Ren Lencioni, right? That's how you pronounce his name?
Lencioni.
Okay.
It flows, rolls off the tongue.
But The Working Genius caught my eye, first of all, just because I love his books, his writing style. You can just like read the whole thing in just like one sitting, just the fable version of how he kind of tells a story. But The Working Genius really caught my attention just because it was just this new form of assessment of understanding how you do work and all these different things. I know you've been certified in the process of being able to lead teams through this, been leading teams through it for several months now, I think. So why don't you give us a brief introduction to what this actually looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that, you know, really drew me to the Six Working Genius, and before it was even a book, Pat and the team at the Table Group actually had released the assessment before it was even a book, because they wanted to get it into the hands of the people and get a little bit of feedback before they released the book. And so it's become a national bestseller now. And Patrick has spoken at all sorts of different church leadership conferences. Most recently, he was at the Global Leadership Summit, which I got a chance to attend live there at Willow Creek with some of the work at Glue. And so that was a great time seeing him and hearing him talk about the Six Working Genius model and what it brings to the table. Before we jump into the assessment, the benefits of the assessment, one of the things that I think it's really important, especially for, you know, church leaders and people who run organizations, businesses, whatever, but I mean, here we're talking about it in the context of church, is to talk about how we hire and who we want to hire. And so this will get you miles down the road, much, much further with your team, if you really start to think about and put in some intentionality behind who we hire. And one of the things that I see often in churches is we have a whole group of people who are really passionate about what we're doing at church. They're incredible people. We love them. They'd give their right arm for the church. And so we kind of ask them to. We ask them to come on staff and be a part of our team, whether it be a paid staff or volunteers. And I know in the church planting world, I've been part of that world, that you kind of take everybody that you can get, right, to accomplish that mission, people that are going to jump in. But I think it's really important to think about, you know, do these people fit our culture? Are these people of character that we can count on? Because we can teach skills to people, but those two things, those, you know, that culture fit and that character fit, I think that's really important when we talk about who are we going to bring onto the team and what that's going to look like when we bring them in. So once we're there, we're talking about getting people on the bus, right? And now what we want to talk about is like, how do we know that they're in the right seat? And how do we know that we're giving them the roles and responsibilities and jobs that they're going to be fulfilled with and that they're going to be excellent at fulfilling for our team? So does that make sense, Andrew? And I think that's like, unfortunately, I see a lot of churches hire because of what I call emotion, right? This person loves us. We love them. They're fantastic. They'll do a ton of stuff for us. Let's bring them on staff. And we don't have really any understanding of what we're asking of them or what their skills or talents are. And we put them in a role that they're unequipped for. And 6 months later, we have to have that hard conversation of, hey, expectations just aren't being met on both ends. And then a year later, one of the things that I've become really passionate about helping churches figuring out their staffing is because a year later, a lot of those folks not only leave that church, but they leave the large C church and now they have a bad taste in their mouth. And it takes a little bit of process to go through healing and come back to the church. And it's a loss on both ends. And so I really hate seeing that. And so I think this is a tool that can really help once you get those people on the bus, you know, help you drive that bus a long way. So I'm going to share my screen and have some slides for us today. I'm going to walk through some of the Working Genius model. And then towards the end of this, before we shift into some stuff about glue, I'd love to just have a time of question and answer and see if anybody has any questions, if they come in online or do you have the ability to do that, Andrew?
Yeah, for sure.
Right on, man. Good deal.
And I got a list if nobody else asks any, so.
Okay, sweet. Yeah, I knew you'd have something, man. And it's not fair to ask me about, you know, why I hit that walk-off loss home run and never, ever again, so. All right. So the Working Genius model, if you've heard about the Working Genius model, you've probably heard about something that we like to call widget. And widget is basically the six types of genius that it takes to get a job done. So when we talk about the Working Genius model, what we're really looking at here is we say that in any job that you want to accomplish, so any job that needs to be done, it really takes these six different stages of work. And as Patrick and the table group created this assessment, what they began to discover is that everybody is hardwired or created with what they would say are two geniuses and two frustrations. And then in the middle of that, you have your competencies. So we'll work through that here in just a few minutes, but I just kind of wanted to give you an overview of the Working Genius model. So first off, we have the wonder of invention. And the wonder of invention are people who love to speculate. They love to question. These are the people who will look at their environment and they will say, why are things the way that they are? And could things be better? Why are we doing things this way? Is there a better way to be doing these things? Are we achieving the potential that we could possibly achieve? They like to sit in the kind of in the ambiguity of things and really ponder and begin to identify places of change and need of improvement. And then the next stage is the genius of invention. And inventors are the people who love to come up with new ideas. They love creating something from scratch. They love creating something from nothing. They love to look at it and go, what if we did this? What if we tried this? They like to take whatever someone is wondering about and go, you know what? That's a great question. I want to try and answer that. I want to try and come up with the things that will answer that question. And then from there, it pushes back to the genius of discernment. And the genius of discernment are these people who have this feeling in their gut, this uncanny, and I would say it's even a spiritual gift to say, I don't think that's quite it. Let's go back to the drawing board and let's refine that. Let's make it a little bit better until we really land on what it is that we think is going to help us move forward. So they have gut instincts. They have a great feel. They have great intuition. They're good curators of what's going on around them. They're good curators of recognizing patterns They know how to connect the dots and give good feedback to help the inventors come up with more and kind of better ideas. And from there it goes, once we've landed an idea and the discerner has said, yeah, that's a really great idea. And that's, I think we're there. I think that could be really something powerful for our team or move this idea forward. From there, it goes to the galvanizer. And the galvanizer are the people who take that idea and they generate enthusiasm around it. These are the people who get everybody else on board. They love to get things moving. They love to get people together and say, hey, look, this is a great idea. This is really gonna move our ministry forward or move this project forward or move this program or whatever it is forward. Let's do it. Let's get out of our comfort zones. They're good at pushing people out of their comfort zones and inspiring them and rallying them around a specific idea. Once everybody's on board, you need the genius of enablement. And the genius of enablement is really the person who looks at it and go, okay, I see the idea. I'm on board. How can I help? And oftentimes these people with the gift of enablement will not only ask, how can I help? But what they'll start to do is they'll start to really understand where the puck is going. One of my, I think the greatest athletes to ever play sport is Wayne Gretzky. If you think about this, just to sum up how great Wayne Gretzky was, and this is totally off track, but this is how my head works. You get points for goals and assists in the National Hockey League. Wayne Gretzky is the all-time goals leader and the all-time assists leader. He's also the all-time points leader. But take away all his individual goals, all his scoring, and he would still be the all-time assists leader. That's impressive. And that's how much he got his teammates involved in everything. And when asked about like how he was so great at hockey, Wayne Gretzky said, you know what, I would often try to skate to where the puck was going. So he didn't see the play where it was. He saw where it was headed. And I just love that. And so that's what people who are gifted with the gift of enablement can do. They see where the puck is headed and they begin to anticipate what's needed to get the job done. And they're the ones that really bring that help. From there, it goes to the people with the gift of tenacity. Now, this is not me at all. These are the people who love to kick over obstacles. They love to check off the box on the to-do list, just getting stuff done, right? These are the people who blow through doors to commit to ensuring that the idea or the solution gets completed and it gets across the finish line. So the geniuses of wonder, invention, discernment, galvanizing, enablement, and tenacity. Now you can see there's really some definite interplay between a few of these, especially between discernment and invention, right? Because somebody's going to come up with ideas and the discerner can go, I don't think we're quite there yet. I think we need to go back. I don't think we're quite there yet. I need to. And then the inventor keeps coming up. The cool thing about this model is once your team begins to understand where you are and where everybody else is, that's when it really becomes a really, really powerful thing. I'll just give you a quick story. I was working with a chain of spas and salons down in the San Antonio, Texas area. And the kind of CEO owner of this, it's a small chain of spas and I don't know, massages and pedicures and manicures, stuff like that. I don't know all the services that they provided, but the CEO had hired this one young lady to kind of be oversee the staff and get the staff on board, really to do the work of galvanizing what she was asking her to do. But this girl really had the gift of wonder. And she would say, you know, I don't think that's, you know, could we be doing this better? Or I feel like we can, that there's something here that we're missing out on that maybe if we did this, it would really help us do this. And the CEO kept going back to her, all right, come back to me with something. And the young lady would say, I don't have anything. I don't have an idea. I just feel like there's something we're missing, something better. And the CEO admitted while we were doing this team exercise, she goes, that always frustrated me because I'm the type of person who thinks that you can't come to me saying that we can do something better without an idea of how to do those things better. And she goes, and now that I understand that she had this genius of wonder and could ask the questions about, are we missing something? Is there something we could be doing better? But she didn't have that idea of invention, but she does have that galvanizing I'm really missing that person who can piggyback offer and go, okay, what if we tried this? And it really opened up her eyes, and she restructured her team and how they're doing things, and really sought to bring that person with the gift of invention onto her team. And she said, I caught up with this gal. She's in my program for my master's. And she said, our team is more healthy and more streamlined and more efficient. We're doing some great things. Our business has grown, and it's because we feel like we're operating out of our strengths or our geniuses. So
that's awesome. And so this is not, so Lencioni, I know, is a believer, there's a lot of stuff in leadership development. This is not specifically, or wasn't specifically designed only for churches. Like, this was marketplace first and primarily, as teams are developing and growing, and really of any size, right? I mean, it could be like a 5-person staff or a 500 person staff or 5,000, based on all these different things. There'd just be like little subsets of teams within the team, right? Have you worked currently with larger organizations, or can you talk about some of how organizations are utilizing this for staffing, whether that's at the C-suite level or just even at the base, you know, on the boots on the ground level?
Yeah, I actually just worked with a team here at Glue, our network team, and they kind of oversee the different networks of denominations and large church networks and stuff like that. And there's about 15 people on that team. And when they took this test, they began, one of the things that you can do, and I'll get to it here in a minute, is you not only get to understand what your own working geniuses and frustrations are, but you know everybody else's on your teams. And so when you can stand back and we can put this on what we call a team map. And when you look at the team map and we list the geniuses and the frustrations, you can see where your team is having conflict naturally, because the people who maybe have the genius of wonder might be frustrated in the area of tenacity. Well, the people who are in tenacity might be frustrated with the people who have the idea of wonder. And so it really can start to direct, when you understand your team map, how your team works together, the stages of work that you have to get through. And this goes a lot deeper. We're just kind of giving a high level overview of this, but we really begin to talk about stages of work, right? So if we were to break this model up into three stages, the wonder and invention, that's really one stage of work in and of itself. That is what we would call like the activation stage, right? Or the ideation stage. So that's when you're coming up with stuff. I got to dig through my notes here and make sure that I have all that stuff in there. And I would have prepared a different slide. So we have these different stages, and the wonder and the invention really come into that ideation stage. And that's where things are starting to happen. That's where you're starting to come up with stuff. That's where you're starting to really develop things. And then the DNG, that's what we would call the activation stage. And that's what a lot of teams miss, right? They go right from activation or ideation into implementation. And implementation is that enablement and tenacity. So, hey, we got this idea, let's get it done. But what they really miss is that activation stage, that discerning, is it the right idea? And then getting everybody onto the same stage. So we have ideation, activation, and implementation, if you were to break those kind of three columns up. And so any team can really look through it. Smaller teams are going to notice where your strengths and weaknesses are a lot easier, because if you have five people on the team and there's six geniuses and everybody has two, you might not have all the geniuses covered, right? And so you can really see, and we'll look at a sample team map here. I think I have that included. But does that answer your question there, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's funny. My brother-in-law is working for like a trucking company or something like that, and they use the working genius, where, like you were talking about, in hiring before they even know what they're hiring for. And so some of those type of things of early on using it, but then also on the back end to just discern where their strengths, where their weaknesses are as a team. So that's a great opportunity to do some of that. And it'd be cool to kind of walk in just the lack of certain areas, like you mentioned already, like if you're missing just that activation piece, like what happens there, but maybe if you're missing the wonder, or if you're missing enablement, or if you're missing galvanizing, like what are the implications of that? But I do want to get into maybe church specific contexts, mm-hmm. and what that looks like. You know, this in church planting, a lot of our churches are, you know, under 200. So our staffs are, you know, five people or less or something like that the majority of the time. And even as you're like building a launch team, like, you know, and we can dive into some of that stuff, but let's say just working with an established church in ministry, what do these things look like?
Yeah. Let me cover a couple bases before I answer that question, if that's okay.
Okay.
So one of the things that, because I think, when we oftentimes think about like, hey, how do I run my staff on this? We give it to our five people staff, right? But you also have at your disposal some key volunteers. And one of the things that's really neat is when you invite volunteers into this process and you understand what their geniuses is, if you have gaps where your geniuses are, you might have people who are key volunteers who fill those geniuses. And so you can invite them into those roles and give them kind of a larger piece to play in where the church is headed, which is really neat. One of the things that this model does is it really kind of frees us up from guilt and judgment. And I think this is an important point, especially as for churches, especially when we go back to what I talked about at the beginning about making sure that we're hiring people for culture and character and maybe not necessarily talent, because we can put them, you know, where they're kind of suited and all that sort of stuff. And before I even get into this, I want to say that the working genius is not a personality assessment. It's a productivity assessment. So a lot of churches and a lot of businesses and organizations have been using personality assessments to figure out people's personalities and try and apply that to work. This applies directly to work. This is meant to apply directly to how people work. So it's 80% productivity, 20% personality. And so what this is really beginning to highlight when we talk about those geniuses is that these are the way people are wired to work. And when we say wired to work, these are the things that if people are operating in their geniuses, they get joy and energy and fulfillment from their work when they're operating in their geniuses, and they get really drained and tired and frustrated and burnt out when they're operating mostly from their frustrations, right? So this allows us to kind of free ourselves and others up from guilt and judgment. So the idea of self, like I admitted, I've never been a tenacity person. I always felt bad about that. I've never been the person to push it over the line to get stuff done. I've always kind of been that that discerner, like pushing back on ideas. And I've always been that enabler of really wanting to help other people and see others succeed and lift them up. So once I began to understand my working genius, it freed me up from a lot of the guilt on myself. It doesn't mean that I don't ever have to do tenacity work. I do have to do tenacity work, but I know that that drains me and burns me out. And so I save that for reserved moments where I don't have to put some energy into other things throughout the rest of the day. It also frees me up from judging others, right? It's this fundamental attribution error. If anybody's ever heard of the fundamental attribution error, it's that idea where if somebody cuts you off in traffic, you know, they cut you off, you honk your horn. We know you're all church planners and church workers, so there's no fingers involved, but you might wave or give them a thumbs down, you know, visual disapproval, whatever. And you're probably thinking to yourself, man, that person is a total jerk. You know, I can't imagine the type of person that just weaves in and out of traffic and cuts people off. And man, they're probably really difficult to live with and probably really difficult to play softball with and really difficult to do these webinars with. Not that I'm talking about any specific, but, you know, we start to attribute to their character based on the fact that they cut us off. So they must be a jerk because look at how they are. Yet when we do that and we cut somebody off, we always attribute it to, well, oh man, it was just an accident. I didn't really see them, or I was running late, you know, or I really didn't mean to do that, but I just really had to get somewhere. And so we attribute it to our environment, right? We attribute their action of cutting somebody off to their character, and we attribute our cutting somebody off to our environment. That's the fundamental attribution error. And it's what we do in work too. Well, that person doesn't push things over the line. They're lazy. That person really doesn't strive to get things done. They have a hard time they drop the ball sometimes when it's getting it across the finish line. They're really lazy. They're unmotivated. Or man, that person's head is always in the clouds. They're always asking questions about like, what if we did this? Or what if we did that? What if we could understand each other's geniuses and frustrations and really put each other in positions to win? It really makes a difference. And so we view it as kind of an altitude walking, you know, down from 30,000 feet where the questions are all the way down to the ground. You know, it's kind of like landing a plane. Your head's in the clouds, you're asking questions, and the tenacity person's making sure that lands. And so when it comes to, you know, the idea of church ministry and getting people into the right things in the right team, this is something that I actually knew instinctively. And I think most church leaders, if you're a fairly self-aware leader, you know your weaknesses and you know what you're strong at and you know what you're weak at. But a lot of times, a lot of church leaders, you know, they believe that they have to put it all on their shoulders because they are the leader. They're the one in charge of the plan. And really, when we can start to understand where we're not, how we're not wired and what things are burning us out and what things are giving us joy and energy, and we can fuel our time and attention into those things and bring people around us, whether they be paid staff or volunteers, or even just somebody in a season around us to help where our frustrations are, and allow us to operate out of our places of genius, it could really make a huge difference. So in my own personal life, like I said, I kind of understood where my weaknesses and failures were early on in ministry. And so when I had an opportunity to hire somebody, I always hired somebody, and I didn't know that it was called tenacity. This is, you know, still only a few years old. I always hired somebody who could get things done. Like that was their passion. And so what I would instruct that person to do is that when we're pushing through, when we have a big, you know, outreach coming up, or we have a big program coming up, or we're starting to try and do things for ministry that really need to get done, what I need you to do on my team is I need you to be the boss and tell me I need this by this date. Otherwise this will not happen. And I need you to hound me on it, because I don't have that tenacity. I didn't have the language at that point, but I would say, I don't have that ability to really push things over the line. I need you to keep me in line for that. And I would make sure that I had hired somebody who was comfortable with that, who was passionate about that, because I really believed that once I hired somebody to do a job, to accomplish our vision or our mission or what we were doing within our ministry, I didn't want them to do it the way I thought they should do it. I'm hiring them to bring their skills and their talents and their, you know, gifts to accomplish the mission and vision and the things I'm asking of them in their way, because it's not the way that I would do it. And so it's releasing that governance and control of what I think we should have to do. And what that allowed me to do is it allowed me to live in the places where I was good at and hand things off to that I wasn't necessarily good at to people who were really, really good at it and passionate about it. And our teams thrived because of that. What I believe I was doing was putting people in the places of their genius before I even knew this language, you know? So to me, this has always kind of been instinctive. And I think this is one of the reasons why it rings true for me and why it resonates with me so deeply, is because that's kind of how I've always operated. Is I know what I'm good at. I'm good at casting vision. I'm good at communicating that vision and that mission and carrying kind of the vision in front of my people. What I'm not good at is, you know, I'm not good at invention. I'm not good at inventing those things. So I wanted somebody who came up with great ideas for our ministry. I could discern if they were not, as the leader, if they were the right thing or not. And then we'd go back and we'd go around, and then having people who had the tenacity to get those over the line, it really helped our ministry thrive. And I think if I would have had a tool like this at that point, it really would have helped an awful lot.
Yeah, I think one of the things, like as you're kind of talking about that, one of the natural things that a lot of people will kind of gravitate towards is what you mentioned earlier. Either like there's like the idea people, and then there's like the get her done people, and there's basically two categories, and you're either on a spectrum of one or the other, right? It's kind of like the you know, either the thinking wavelength from Tom Patterson, or you know, as you're abstract thinking versus concrete thinking, and you know, just those type of people and how they lead and all that stuff. And so there's a lot of different models and processes out there that speak a little bit towards this, but I loved the way that the working genius really broke it down even much farther than that, of being, and even just saying, like, even in the idea of activation, like for me personally, like I have a working genius of discernment and a working frustration and galvanizing, and yeah. They're both in the activation phase. And it's just like, it was a good model for me to just see, like, okay, this is what I do well and why, and this is what I have to work at, and this is what drains me, right? Mm-hmm. And that was interesting, just as you were like intuitively kind of like talking about and just feeling like I lived out this story already, but being able to have a lot more categories to kind of put things in was very helpful for me.
Yeah, and it really does give you a common language too, right? I mean, if I were to have this language on my team, what it does is it allows us to hold people accountable without judging them, right? And so when the team that I did this with at Glue, they've adopted this language and they've actually structured their meetings differently to where they say, okay, hey, you know what? Our people who are, let me get back to this slide. So our people who are up here in this ideation, when we're brainstorming sessions, we're going to have these three people in the brainstorming sessions. These are the people that we want in those brainstorming sessions, because a person of tenacity is going to sit in that meeting where you're brainstorming and asking, what if, what if, what if, what if, and they're going to be sitting there going, when can I get out of here? Cause I've got stuff to do. I don't want to sit here and ask what if all day, you know, but that same goes for that person when you're getting into that meeting of okay, is everything lined up? Do we have everything that we need? Are these people they're going to make you sick. Because if we go back to this kind of altitude of geniuses and we look at it as kind of like an airplane coming in for a landing, if you're down here in the enablement and tenacity and you're getting stuff done and you're wrapping things up and you're making sure everything is lined up, and then the wonder person jumps in and goes, what if we did this? I got an idea. And all of a sudden you go back from 10,000 feet back up to 30, you know, and then the tenacity person's like, no, 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 we're landing this plane. You know, you go back down to 5,000. You're going to get sick to your stomach, right? Because you can't be doing this all the time and really bring home an idea and let it be impactful. And so they've been able to implement this language of like, hey, this meeting is going to be around brainstorming. We're going to do some wonder and invention, and we're going to come up with some new ideas. And this one is we're really going to nail it down and make sure that we're driving it home. And they've been able to say, where are we at? They've used this altitude to figure out where they're at in a project. Are we in the 3,000 to 2,500 space, or are we in the 10,000 to 500? And what they can do is go, hey, you know what? I'm struggling not to use names. That's your gift of wonder coming out. But right now we're operating in the 10,000 to 5,000 foot space. And so it's not a judgment, but it is an accountability. Yeah. And that person go, oh, you know what? You're right. I shouldn't have brought that in. Let's land this plane. And I'll say that for another time. So,
yeah.
So here's my working genius profile, right? My areas of genius are, like I said, are enablement and discernment. And then my frustrations are the invention and the tenacity. Now, you also notice that we have two areas of working competency, wonder and galvanizing. The areas of working competency are a little bit different than the genius and frustration. Think of it as like a cup of coffee. So I love coffee. I love a good, you know, gourmet cup of coffee, not a, you know, Mr. Coffee or a Starbucks or something like that, but a good, nice, well-crafted Dark Heart here in Loveland, Colorado. That's a great cup of coffee, right? So think about when you take that cup of coffee and you put it into a thermos, that coffee is going to stay hot all day long. It's going to continue to carry that heat throughout the day. It's going to be there when you need it. It's going to give you that boost of energy and that caffeine when you want it. And it's going to be good for a long time. That's kind of what happens when you are working in an area of your geniuses. You have that ability to maintain that level of that high level of work. And you get that energy and you get that joy from the things that you are doing when you're operating in that area of work. the working competency is kind of like going to a coffee shop and just getting, you know, a cardboard cup of coffee with no lid on it. The coffee is going to be good for an hour, hour and a half, unless you really, really like, you know, cool, thick, nasty, you know, coffee that's been sitting out for a couple hours. It's going to stay okay for a few hours. And that's what it's like working out of your competencies. It's really like, okay, I can do this for a little while. This isn't necessarily where I get energy and joy. And the frustrations are like taking a cup of that cardboard cup and poking holes in the bottom, right? That coffee is just going to drain through. And after a while, there's just not going to be anything there. And so that's what it's like working out of your area's frustrations. Now, it doesn't mean that people are never going to have to do things in their area of frustration. I have to do tenacity work all the time. Me and my boss, my supervisor, my teammate are the only two on our team at Glue. We do ministry innovation and kind of church consulting at Glue. When we look back at projects that we've done really, really well, he is W and I. W and I. And so when we look back, he's got the WI, I've got the ED. What are we missing? We're really missing tenacity. And since there's two of us, we can galvanize each other. We can be like, yeah, man, we got to do this. And I have it as a competency, so I can step in and fill that role. But the projects that we've really killed, the projects that we've really crushed, is when we've had a project manager come alongside us who had that gift of tenacity and helped us push it over the line and demanded things from us. So now that we don't have that project manager, I have to fill that role. So I often try and do that at the end of the day when I have some space and I know that I don't have anything else coming up. I'll block off 45 minutes, and this is when I have to do my tenacity work. I can fill in with my competencies for a season or for a few hours each day, but I really want to be working out of my geniuses. So that's how we look at our teams. Are we giving them the work that energizes and brings them joy and fulfillment? They're going to have to, especially on small teams. And this was where I was talking about bringing alongside, you know, a volunteer. If you're missing, you know, one of the working geniuses, let's say if I were looking at my team map, and I think I have, well, maybe I don't. If I were looking at my team map and I see that we have everything represented except enablement, that's just missing on our team. Who on my team is competent in that area? So when we're talking about putting together a project or developing something, who can I utilize on my team for a short amount of time to bring that enablement? Or do we have volunteers on our team who are really gifted in enablement? And we can bring them in and say, hey, we'd love to invite you into this process and help us figure some of this stuff out. Here's what we're asking of you. And so when you start thinking about staff, also start thinking about key leaders and knowing where they're at and being able to plug them in and pull them in is really a gift to them as well. Because what we're talking about is engaging your people in the work of the ministry, which is Ephesians 4:12, right? Like, you know, we've called all these people to equip others to do the work of the ministry, to equip the people to do the work of the ministry. And so when you invite them into the work of your ministry based on their working geniuses, like, that's a really cool thing. So,
yeah. I question around some of that stuff, because towards the end of his book, Lencioni talks about just the idea of burnout. Mm-hmm. And just in this conversation with the frustrations in particular, he says, you know, what's interesting about this is that the type of work that a person does turns out to be much more important in regard to burnout than the volume of work that you do. So it's not that there's just an overwhelming, endless list of things to get done. Yep. It's the fact that you're doing things that you just hate doing. Yep. And absolutely. When you look at just the whole widget process and you think of just pastoral ministry, do you think that there are things that are, and maybe even in smaller churches, like where the pastor is doing the vast majority of like the staff work and things like that, are there natural things as you see different working geniuses or frustrations specifically in pastoral ministry that are better to have or worse to have or just are in conflict?
No, I really hate kind of, you know, when we talk about, so the cool thing about the working genius is not only it has a quantitative and a qualitative aspect to it, right? So if you were to take the working genius assessment, you are going to go through the quantitative part, and it's going to come back and say, because of the quantitative stuff, because of all of the research and all of the study and all the things that we've put into this, here's where we think your genius's competencies and frustrations lie. But then it pushes it back to you and it says, now based on what you know, like if we were to go back and I were to spend a little bit more time looking at this model, when we talk about responsive versus disruptive geniuses, right? And the different stages, are you more of a person who likes to respond to people and your environment, or are you somebody who likes to disrupt? So what it does is it pushes it back to you and goes, okay, now that you've seen what we think you are, you know, we want you to evaluate this and kind of go through these steps. And we want you to say, you know what, I think I'm more G than I am E. I really think I'm, and I'm going to do the hard work of really being honest with myself. And I'm going to move this E down to a competency, and I'm going to move this G up to my genius. So now my geniuses are G and D, right? So that's the qualitative part. So it really says, hey, here's the quantitative part. Here's the qualitative part. So let's move it forward. So the idea that one is better than the other, they've really tried to protect against that, because every genius is needed to complete a job, which is a great thing. They really have done a ton of work and scientific validation around this that they're still doing, that every genius is needed to complete a job. Now, I do think that there are some, you know, that can hinder or be a little bit more frustrating for leaders, and some that can maybe lead to, and it depends on kind of how you structure your staff and how you structure your church. I mean, I've seen a pastor who one of his working geniuses was tenacity and galvanizing. And it worked really, really well for a short time with his people, because he was somebody who could get everybody on his page, no matter what it was, and he would drive them to get stuff done. But he would look at his staff, and he was turning over staff every year, you know, like almost an entire staff every year. And he just couldn't figure out why. And everybody, you talk to him, oh, he's a great guy. He's a super dude, but I just couldn't keep up with his pace. Well, because he was expecting everybody to work at that. And when he began to understand, oh, I'm tenacity and galvanizing, which means I can pull people around me and I will drive them. He goes, I've been driving people into the ground, haven't I? I said, yeah. And he goes, I need to get some people on my team who can notice when I'm doing that and say, hey, we need to slow down here. That not everybody's going to keep up with you, right? And so he's really calmed down. I think he's had, you know, a core staff for about a year and a half now, which is coming up on 2 years, which is really cool to see that he's understood that about himself. But I've also seen, you know, leaders who are really gifted have a genius of wonder. And they're always asking like, hey, what if we did this? What if we did this? And nothing ever gets done, you know? So it's not that one's necessarily better than the other, but I think it's understanding who you are and who your team is and how you want to implement this to make sure that you're accomplishing the goals that God has given you and the things that he's called you to. And just thinking through ministries and programs and outreach through a different light. And so I think one of the great things so I don't know that there's one that's better than the other.
Yeah. Cause you mentioned like even in the personality side of things that it's only like 20% personality, is that what you said? Mm-hmm. And because you can have like raging extroverts that have geniuses across the board, and introverts or people that are very heart driven or very, you know, head first, you know, all across the board when it comes to the working genius.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so what I love about this is I would pair this. I'm kind of a leadership and growth and staffing junkie. So I love assessments. I do have to say, when it comes to how we get work done, Six Working Genius is my favorite. I think it speaks to things that no other assessment does. There are other assessments that can assess your personality, right? And when you pair those two things, like with a good DISC, you know, and you're looking at the colors profile of the DISC, and you pair that, and now you know how this person, you have this a much more rounded out picture of who this individual is. I know their personalities, I know their tendencies, but now I also know what makes them productive and really to get work done and how they'll enjoy their job. And when people enjoy their job, studies have shown that people are more likely to stick with a job that pays them less when they enjoy their work, when it's meaningful, when there's purpose, when they're really enjoying what they're doing. And so I think this is really important for churches and especially church planners to understand, because a lot of times those salaries, you know, they are lower than another job that somebody could go get. And people want to be involved in ministry. And so they'll oftentimes take a lower paying job in ministry versus what they could get in the marketplace because they want to be involved in their church. They want to be involved in ministry. But oftentimes churches don't do them any favors, and they don't put them in positions to succeed and positions to thrive. And so when we can start to align those things, and some of the resources that are available when you work with a facilitator is there are some hiring practices and some hiring guides about how do we go about finding that person who has that idea invention? How do we go about finding that person that has the genius of tenacity? And so you can start to think through as you start to bring people on your staff, you know, what do we need on our team? What do I want to accomplish in this season of ministry? And what kind of geniuses do we not have that we might need on that team to fulfill that role? And when you think about it, you know, like one of the things that I love is it kind of flattens the org structure too. Because this means that, like, you know what, sometimes that lead pastor, that senior pastor doesn't have to be the one who's driving everything to get it across the finish line. Maybe that goofy youth pastor, probably not, has that gift of tenacity, right? And maybe I'm just going to lean on him to drive everybody and to get that across the line. I'm going to let him do his thing there. Or I'm going to let that women's, you know, ministry director really be the galvanizer behind this idea, because I need everybody on the team. And when I realize that, hey, as a lead pastor, I don't have to get everybody on the page because I can ask this person to do it. And it levels that playing field. And what I think it does is it really shows an incredible amount of humility when you can say, you know what, that's not my strength. That's not where, you know, I'm a genius at, but you are. Can you carry this for our team? Can you lead this part? And that humility, that allowing people to step into roles that they didn't think they were able to, what that really does is it creates a sense of unity, and it creates a sense of bonding, and it creates a sense that we are all in this together. And so there's ownership. And so those studies have just shown that when that sort of stuff happens, people are more happy to take work at a place that doesn't necessarily pay them as much, but their culture is just off the charts because they have opportunity. They've been given responsibility. There's kind of more of a flat structure for the organization, all sorts of different stuff that I've really been pouring into. And that's why I love kind of where this fits. And so again, when you partner it with a, you know, a DISC or there's a bunch of different strengths finders, culture index, whatever, anything but the Enneagram, and you know my thoughts on that. That's a whole other hour.
Horoscopes, as some would call it.
I can't stand that. Anyways, yeah, I'll get off that hot box before I get in trouble.
I could sit in here talk with you for another couple hours on this type of stuff, but I've already had a couple of questions of people asking as far as what would it look like to bring you in, or either at an organizational level or at a church level, the type of coaching that you do, what does engagement with you look like to be able to walk your team through the build out of utilizing the working genius?
Yeah. So right now what I'm doing is what I'm calling custom models for churches. So a lot of guys who do a lot of this kind of staffing, coaching, and stuff like that, or working genius even, they have set fees and they charge an awful lot. And that's been one of my frustrations is, especially when we start talking about culture creation, you know, organizing your staff and getting them, you know, crafting mission and vision, all the stuff that comes into staffing. A lot of those folks charge quite a bit of money. And you know, this is true as well. And so one of the things that I felt called to do this is I just want to work with churches and where their budgets are at, especially when we talk about, you know, church planning. I know budgets are oftentimes tight. And so it's just a reach out. Hey, here's what we're looking for. Here's what we'd like to do. Is this in your area? Is this in your wheelhouse? And what would it cost? And then I kind of come back to the church and say, hey, here's a few options. Do we want to do everything virtual? Do you want to have an in-person visit? Do we want to have a day? And then I just kind of work through ways and say, hey, here's what I think it would take. Where are you guys at with this? And we kind of go back and forth, because the last thing I want to do, and the last thing I think anybody should do, is really charge a church a ton when that those funds could be going to elsewhere in ministry, to outreach or to missions or to caring for your staff. Or, man, I'd love to see, you know, them do an excellent team dinner or something like that. You know, yeah. And I know those. So for me, it's just working with those ministries and saying, hey, let's come to an agreement on something that will bless you guys and help you guys grow. But also realizing that at some point, you know, I'll have to think about bills and, you know, taking care of my own family and stuff like that.
How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me. I'll throw two emails in here. I'm in the process of setting up my own org, which will be called Blue Bison. And I just, with school and my full-time job at Glue, I haven't been able to give that the full attention yet. As soon as school's over here in a couple months, I'll give that a little bit more attention. And it's called Blue Bison. And there's a story behind that as well. But I'll give you two emails here. I'll throw them in the chat. And the first one is in my email at Glue, if you ever have any questions about Glue. And then the second one is just my personal email. And Damon is my first name, Carrie is my middle name. So that's why it's SnyderDamon@gmail.com. And I'm starting to aggregate a list of leadership. So if you're interested in that, and just basically weekly, just like leader tips and tricks or inspirational, you know, thoughts around leadership, I'm going to start sending that out most likely in October or November. And that will help me just kind of see who's interested in what, and if I can be of any sort of help or service. That's really my heart. So if I can send out a weekly encouragement or some things that I'm seeing within different churches or different organizations, I'm going to start doing that as well. So feel free to email me at either of those addresses.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll put those they're in the chat. We'll get those out to anybody who's interested if you're watching this after the fact. For the last just a couple minutes, so just talk to us about the work at Glue. So we had you come out, and if anybody's interested, all of our sessions were recorded and live. So Carrie was one of our keynote speakers at Think Next earlier this year, February, March, and had him and Chris Abbott from Church Marketing University, and just did a lot of great training around just creative and innovational outreach and being able to engage with the lost in our community through a lot of different avenues, a lot of different resources. And so one of the things I want to care to do real briefly, if you can. Right.
Yeah, we're good.
Is kind of show us the Glue platform. Glue does a ton of different things, offers a lot of resources to churches. So, and I know that we have like a Nexus organization network set up, so you can get involved under kind of the Nexus umbrella, or you can go totally separate from us, but tons and tons of resources. And so if you have just a quick 3-minute commercial or something that you could share with us about the Glue platform, I'd love to hear some more about that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm just going to hop in real quick, and I'll share my screen again. And Glue is really starting to gain traction in the market. I mean, we're still fairly new in some of this stuff and where we've been heading over the last couple of years. But Glue has become basically the tech leader within the faith eco space. And so we've got three things I'll just hit real quick. And when you sign up for an account with Glue, everything is free to churches. We're funded by incredibly generous donors from across the United States who just believe in getting powerful tools into the hands of churches. And so we're still figuring a lot of stuff out. I'm not going to say we don't have our warts and bumps and bruises, because we do, but we're doing our best to try and figure that out. So we have a ton of partnerships, and in Discover, this is really a gigantic resource library of all our partnerships, from everything from like He Gets Us, which has been, you know, you've seen those nationwide commercials in the Super Bowl. We just launched a partnership with The Chosen, where if you wanted to do some stuff around The Chosen, there's sermon resources, reading plans, devotionals, all the clips from all the different seasons, if you wanted to show them. They're licensed through us, so churches have access to those, like legally, I guess, if you want to call it. We did some stuff with Dr. Cloud around his book on trust. There's all sorts of different hubs and things that churches can utilize as far as resources go, to really help, you know, just equip your people and to further ministry. There's all sorts of text scripts, plug and play things that you can do with texting, because that leads us to our next thing, which is we have a free texting platform. And so if you're paying text in church, $69 a month, plus the cost of text, you can switch over to Glue and have a robust texting platform that integrates with church management systems that you don't have to pay a dime for. We even cover the cost of texts, which is pretty neat. And then built off of that is our outreach program, which is where we partner with things like He Gets Us, The Send. There's about a dozen different campaigns that we are running nationwide that are all funneled to connect churches to people in their communities who are looking for help. Now, this doesn't equate necessarily to butts and seats on a Sunday, but what it does is it's a bridge builder to people in your community who are seeing these things either on social media, on television, on billboards, from a nationwide level. And they're saying, you know what, I do need prayer, or I am struggling with loneliness, or I am struggling with, depression, or my relationships, or my finances. And when they reach out, what happens is, and I'm going to try and, when they reach out, what happens is they see that, they fill out a form online, and then Glue connects them to churches that are closest to them in their area. And if your church is in the program, you can be one of those churches. You can set, parameters about how many explorers a day that you want to, and what topics do they want to come through, and all that sort of stuff. Cause the explorers are really telling us, man, here's their needs that we're seeing, you know, prayer requests, loneliness, sadness, relationships, anxiety, marriage, our churches care, our in-house stuff, connection, relationships, depression, loss. And so these are areas that the church is equipped uniquely to speak into and to provide hope to. And so they're doing this usually at night. And so this is a great way to get volunteers involved with reaching out to people who are just looking for hope and help, and just saying, hey, we'd love to pray for you. Without saying, hey, come to church, you know, build the trust first and build a relationship with these individuals. And then it allows you an opportunity to speak into their life. And so Glue's got a ton of different tools available for that. And if you want to know more, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to walk you or your team or somebody through it, and how you can get involved in those programs, even how you can get hooked up with free texting. So that's the quick and dirty version. There's a lot more stuff to it. If you're interested in the faith and tech space, we just launched this AI in the Church Hub. We're hosting a hackathon in October for different developers of faith and tech ecosystem, and just seeing what's out there and how we can use technology to help further and advance the gospel, and not allow our big push is to say, how do we not allow technology to disconnect us, but how do we use it to further the face-to-face and the in-person relationship and the community that's available inside of a church. So we believe we have a moral imperative to lead the faith ecosystem in this space and to shepherd it well. So lots of exciting stuff going on.
That's fantastic, man. Well, Kerry, I really appreciate your time, man. This has been a fabulous webinar with some great content, great resources. And if anybody's interested in implementing the Working Genius, really encourage you to reach out to Kerry. Reach out to me. I'll put you in touch with him, or just be able to just to lead better within our churches, lead our teams better, lead our churches better, and just lots and lots of resources to be able to advance the gospel. And
can I say one last thing too?
No. So yeah, go ahead.
You know, one of my other passions is you as pastors. I've been in full-time ministry for 23 years before coming to Glue. And I realize, and studies have shown, that being a pastor is oftentimes a lonely place, whether it be lead pastor, executive pastor, youth pastor. A lot of times you don't feel like you have that safe space or that person that you can open up to. And so one of the parts of my schooling is I'm also getting a certificate in executive coaching, because I want to have that be part of my offerings, is just to be that person in a pastor's life who can be completely open and vulnerable with and build trust with and bounce ideas off of and vent to, and who's disconnected kind of from their context, and can also help them identify areas where maybe they're starting to let things drop or, you know, not guard as closely as they should, because I'm tired of watching pastors blow up their marriages and families and ministries. And I believe that there are people that God has called to stand in the gap. And I want to be one of those people and be that advocate for that pastor and that encouragement for that pastor. So even if it's just something like that, that's a huge passion of mine. I'd love to walk alongside you in that season. So that's it.
Awesome. That was fantastic. No, all I appreciate your time, man, dude. We'll catch up soon. Thank you so much for everything you've shared today.
You got it, man. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yep.